All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to another episode of Questlove Supreme. This is Unpaid Bill. Last week, we gave you part one of our in-studio interview with our friend Hannibal Buress, recorded in Hollywood. If you haven't yet, check that out. Hannibal spoke about Chicago, his beginnings in comedy, and more. We're back with part two. And also, this full interview will be available on YouTube soon, so be sure to check that out too. All right, folks, here we go.
I would think, like, if I'm making my foray into comedy, I would have my defense ready. Like, how do you deal with hecklers? How early do you deal with hecklers?
I mean, you try to just win the room back. You know what I mean? I mean, it's different early on when they don't know you, because then it's just fully combative versus dealing with it now when people pay money to see you and they might have been wanting to see you for a while and then somebody else is ruining their experience. So it's easier to light them up and flip. You could just say like, hey, they didn't come here for that shit. And they're like, we didn't come here for that shit.
You ain't got a no hecklers rule? I've seen a lot of comedians have that now. Like,
we just say it before the show, but if people want to, I mean, sometimes people say stuff and you just like, it's not, they in the seats, so it's usually light work. I'd rather not talk with them just because I got an hour and a half of show and stories, so it's not really.
So you're going to ignore them?
No. Now you don't really ignore if they're loud enough because they took focus. So you just try to just settle the room and just, you know, show them why they're there.
Who's that? Was it said that told us that he makes sure that one of his openers is like a shooter, like that comes out,
yeah.
And his mere job is to roast the audience to be like, you know, I'll embarrass you. I think Chris Rock also had that. Do you know the white?
Yeah, he's good.
Oh, yeah, Anthony Jeselnik.
Yeah.
Who?
Jeselnik.
No. It wasn't. Well, I know Jeselnik, but it's another guy. It's a new guy where he intentionally just comes out in the audience and talks, like, lights you up, like, yeah. Unprovoked, whatever. And, I'm surprised that he's still living. That's how good he is at roasting. But for you, do you always have, like, your back pocket full of, like, your mama jokes or
No, you kind of
just... I don't come to your job and, you know...
Not even that. You just try to get an idea of where they at and just, you know, why they... You know, it depends on the situation or what you were talking about. And a lot of times, especially if they interrupted in a story, it's just as simple as saying, I don't know why you thought it was cool to say that right there.
That is actually...
That was a terrible spot for you to say that.
99% of hecklers must be drunk.
Yeah, drunk or just, you know... Yeah, it's just
I've heckled by accident, so.
You don't say.
No,
you've heckled by accident.
Yeah,
or you've
like
gotten
just being
heckled.
Loud. No, heckled by accident. Like just like I'm sorry. I thought that was a question for me.
Yeah,
but it wasn't.
It never is.
Or like people talking amongst themselves. Yeah, sometimes people talk amongst themselves, and it's so loud it sounds like a heckle. But then a lot of times too, it's a function of my show not being that tight yet.
Don't.
And so it left them too much room.
Yeah,
it left too much room. And so they're like, that's my turn. I can't sit with my thoughts that long. I got something. And so now as I've been on the road with this one, and now that the show is, you don't really leave too much space. Mm-hmm. For somebody to even think of something to say, because you on to the next. So that's what that a lot of the hecklers happen if I'm in a gap and like, oh, where's my next thing? But so now where if the shit is like that, then they ain't got no room.
At what point are you taking this serious? As in, this is what I want to do for a living. And are you aware of the Chicago paths, i.e., you know, either go the Second City route so that a Steve Higgins.
Yeah.
Like, is it general knowledge for every comedian in Chicago that either Higgins or a rep for Lorne Michaels or anyone SNL related is going to spend 3 weeks out there and sort of circle the Second Cities and the UCBs?
Yeah. Well, yeah, around then it was known, but that wasn't really my path or what I wanted to do. At the time, I was kind of really locked in on stand-up. Even getting SNL was after Fallon, Seth Meyers wanted to meet, and I didn't know what he wanted to meet about because I hadn't submitted a packet. I had submitted some stuff the year before, and I thought it was so bad that I was blackballed. I did a cast submission with some bad. I was like, here's Chris Rock being Jerry Seinfeld. It was some stuff that really wasn't as good as I could have. So I was thinking, what does he want to meet about? Because I didn't submit any, and I damn near didn't take the meeting because I had a Priceline ticket back to Chicago, and those got really, they had really rigid change policies. Street. So I was like, what does he want to talk about? Because
yeah, you can't talk about it on the phone. Wait, all right. So that's another question you can answer for me, because this is the number one thing every comedian friend of mine, and The Tonight Show, and SNL.
Yeah.
What is a package, and what goes in those packages? Because they always say to me, well, just have her send me a package.
Right.
What's a package?
The writing packet for SNL or just in general? Or
if you want to be, have you written for a late night show before you did SNL, or is that SNL your entry into writing for a show?
SNL is my entry.
Okay, so if I want to submit a package to SNL, what is in that package?
Probably a handful of sketches. This is also, you know, I'm just thinking of what the format of the show is. I don't know exactly. So it'll be a few sketches, probably a commercial parody, some Weekend Update jokes.
And you have to type this out, like submit it as a script, or you do this like
video?
Or
if you submit it as a writer, you would have it typed out.
Does it help if you have a visual to it? Especially now, like, you know,
probably now, you know, I was my year was 2009, so I'm sure now is definitely more visual because they got more visual. I think they got three different visual camps in there now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and you know, they definitely focusing more on the digital, but yeah, it'll be a few sketches, maybe, yeah, commercial parody, Weekend Update, and that's just a solid submission.
So you feel as though that your actual stand-up on that show was your, you didn't officially have to submit
I never submitted anything written up. I met with Seth. I think the meeting was just to see if I was crazy in person or intolerable. And then he offered me the job at the end of the meeting.
How many years were you at SNL?
1 year, one season.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
In my mind, you were like, or maybe I'm just lumping you in with Tim and Che. And
yeah, we never
like Tim Robinson, Che, and like all
never overlap with Che or who's
or JB Smoove.
Nope,
you were the only lone black guy in.
And Keenan was there. Keenan was. It was just it was me there. Who was Fred Armisen was there. As far as it was Jenny Slate's.
Okay,
1 year there. Yeah, 2009, 2010. Megan Fox was the season premiere.
So got a big
that
movie.
Was your that Wait, was your what? That was your first
that was the first episode and yeah
inside joke for people that particular episode is what has started the mythical war between Mel D. Cole and I
oh wow
because I had a dope sweater that she liked and she ignored him. She's like, oh, I like your sweater. I was like, oh, thanks. And she like he was like, And that sort of that's the beginning of our spy versus spy on Instagram thing with each other. But for you, the one thing, now I wish I'd known you during that period, because I'm always running to Higgins on a Monday after I watch a show. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I'm trying to figure out how do things get greenlit that I can't actually see written on paper. For instance, like I would assume that all sketches on that show, that people have to sit at a table,
yeah,
and physically describe something, and you get feedback in the room or not. But there's some things that I literally can't see it being formed with, like, and at this point, I'm going to fall down the stairs,
yeah,
and trust me, it's going to be funny. Like, is there a lot of that? Where is this faith that, okay, it sounds like you know what you're talking about. Go ahead, write the bit.
Well, yeah, it's the pitch meeting, the Monday pitch where everybody's in the office, in Lauren's office, and some people pitching real ideas, some people pitching fake, and then folks write on Tuesdays, and then it's the read-through. That 2009, 2010 season was the first what's up with that.
Oh,
man,
shit.
Man, that's one of my favorite sketches of all time.
I love that shit.
Oh, my God.
Did you have something to do?
No, I didn't have it, but I just, you know, being there for the beginning was cool. I remember everybody was kind of singing it around the office. Nah. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's the thing, though. Like, at a pitch table, mm-hmm, like, that's a bit that relies a lot on repetition. Mostly Jason Sudeikis dancing in the background.
Yeah.
But it involves a lot of physical things. In which,
how do you?
I literally don't see how that's funny on paper, but it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the show. So
yeah, I think the song carrying it in that setting, you know what I mean? Like everybody's just, you know,
that was Catrice Barnes.
Catrice Barnes, yeah, Sugar Free.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
Was there a bit that you like? What was the bit that you were surprised that actually made it to air that you were a part of?
I only had one sketch of my own that made it. And then I contributed to others and contributed lines here and there. I had Rihanna said one of my lines. That helped me for a little bit, just, you know. Because I popped into Lonely Island office when they were working on Shy Ronnie, because it was just, you know, it was a time where I realized, okay, I'm not getting stuff on, so let me just pop in and try to, you know.
Are you allowed to peep your head in and, hey, what's going on here? And then
You can just, line? Yeah, you can just pop
people
in.
People territorial, like.
Maybe. Some people, you know, they weren't, but some people might have been on that. Some people might have been more closed off than others. I'm not even, you know, I felt comfortable going to, you know, just to chop it up with them. So I popped in, they were working on Shy Ronnie, and I had actually sent him a Bangs video. You remember? Let me take you to the movies.
Girl.
And so
yeah.
The ha ha.
Bangs 8. And so that's your boy Bangs.
Yeah, that's where he got the ha ha.
That's where it came from.
And then it was a line. They were doing the Shy Ronnie, and then I came up with the line. This beat cost a lot of money for Rihanna to say, and so there's the CF. I was like, whoa, Rihanna just said some shit. I said, man, that's crazy.
It sounds like, so did you really enjoy being a writer? Like, it doesn't sound, I mean, I think like you sound like you were thankful for the experience.
Yeah.
It seemed like you just really wanted to just be on stage kind of doing you.
I think before the second half of the season, Chris Rock had actually told me to try to get on camera, try to get on Weekend Update. And so I met with Seth, hey, can I get on Weekend Update? I feel like it was a strong ask because.
You haven't proved yourself yet.
I hadn't done anything, but it was just, you know, well, might as well ask. And he said, all right, write something up, and we'll try it at the table. And so I wrote something. I reformatted the pickle juice joke and this other joke about rental cars or something. I formatted it as me as a financial advisor or something like that. And then we tried it at the table. It went cool. And then we did it in dress rehearsal, and it went cool at dress.
Oh, phew.
And then it got cut. And they were like, we're going to get you next week. And then it never came.
Okay, so I have a question about dress rehearsal. So in my observations there, whenever you guys have the post-dress rehearsal meeting, when you guys find out if you made the cut or not, I automatically know that the people that didn't make it, they always rush up to 17 and they just start getting drunk. Like,
yeah.
there's a level of depression. If I'm giving family secrets away. No, there's just a level of hope. Like, you know, you're putting all your hope that this makes it. And they do like, what, they do like an extra 6 or 7 sketches on the rehearsal show to see what works. And then they got to cut the 6 and then remix it for the 11:30 show. And usually I would know some writers that whose jokes didn't make it. And, you know, you take that lonely trip up to 17 where there's always a stash of beer or like brown liquor or whatever, and people just get ungodly drunk and be like, all right, I'll try again next week. Like, but for you, were you taking stuff personal, or did you feel like there's a time limit, like I gotta get something on next week?
It was just, yeah, it was tough to not get stuff on because it was just, you know, I knew I was funny and I was doing well in stand up, you know what I mean? And so I was having success there. But yeah, it was frustrating to not have stuff moving and feeling like I was creative enough to succeed in the format. I think, you know, if I did it another year, because then I would have known how to move around in the building and just how to collaborate and how to just
learn
really
the system.
Learn the system, because it's really, I mean, it's a terrible onboarding process, if we're being honest. You just
right. Get in where you fit in.
You just like, here's your office. Yeah. Peace. Like, what?
Onboard, the word onboard was just created last year. Like, shit.
Yeah, it was just you just get there.
So but the thing was, I always thought that, because I also recalled you were on 30 Rock a lot.
The next year. Yeah.
Right. So was the decision like, okay, well, let me try. Did you write for 30 Rock, or you were just like?
I wrote for 30 Rock, yeah.
Okay. Was that a better fit for you, or?
It was, SNL kind of soft fired me. There was no real, and then.
You just didn't get a call back for the next season?
Just didn't get a call back, and then 30 Rock came through, I think because Donald had left to do Community. And
right,
so
right, right,
then
yeah,
they
yeah.
need to
they
feel
needed a new person
they,
for
they
it.
Need to fill their diversity spot. And so
were you there to punch up Tracy Morgan?
And the guys, yeah, right.
I punched up, I did a lot of stuff. Like, it wasn't a general thing.
Okay. Every time I mention that on the show, people look at me like I just like I landed from another planet. But I recall, I don't know if he was saying it in jest. I mean, he wasn't saying it jokingly, but I was always under the impression that Glover's sort of existence on 30 Rock was sort of to punch up whatever Tracy Jordan's character was, like to enhance his stuff. Like he did like Werewolf Bar Mitzvah and all that other stuff. And, you know, so I just assumed that when it came to Tracy's character, they needed to not look like all white people writing for the show and that.
No, that was never explicitly said. It was just, you know, you in the room with everybody and you going line through line by the script, everybody pitch on the line until something is just undeniable and you then rewrite it with that and then move along. But yeah, it was, I think the day job, that was more of a regular job, 30 Rock was. Like that was every, you know what I mean? Show up at 9 or 10 or whatever, leave at 6. And so.
Was that challenging? Because that just sounds like the complete opposite.
Yeah, it was
being a comedian.
Man, it wasn't for me, man, but it wasn't.
But less stress than SNL though, right?
The thing with SNL though was that you would have weeks off. So you might do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and then so for that week you could go on the road, do whatever.
Then plus but not you get, for TV. Not for 30 Rock.
Yeah, 30 Rock was just you on. So yeah, it wasn't really for me, man, like that.
How long you do that job?
One season. I went through one season, but it was early on. I realized it wasn't for me, and I said, "Man, am I about to quit this?" I wrote out pros and cons on a sheet. Like,
about to quit just writing or quit comedy? Period.
No,
just,
quit that job and stuff. Yeah. And so I just said, "Let me just tough it out for this year and do it." It's a steady paycheck. But then after that, because I had cabin fever, I think I went on the road for probably 8 months straight, you know what I mean? Just because I was, I went everywhere.
How far in advance was the Andre show? And how is that pitched to you? Hmm. And does it make sense to you at the time when
what Eric does that look like on paper?
Thank you.
Like, for real.
All the sense.
I think it was just more, I'm doing this thing.
You already know he's crazy. And
it wasn't even that. It was just, you want to, it was, when did we film that? Oh, wait.
Is he like an improved version of Hits from the Streets?
Yeah.
Damn, nice, Amir.
And is, well, you've never done any of the, have you done any of this street bits that he does, or
yeah, we did some street stuff in New York. Did the Black Israelites?
Oh shit!
I did acting like we did beating up the police car. I did drunk police officer with a 40. We did who get a stranger? I wrote get a stranger to let like who can get the most strangers let them hold their babies. Which I bailed on that when I do it in real life. I was like, wait a second, I know I wrote this, but I don't want to do this.
So what's the planning like? Because I would assume that you would have to go to a place where you absolutely know that they do not know who Eric Andre is.
Yeah.
And I would see y'all in Harlem and, in the Heights.
First couple seasons, that wasn't an issue.
Right.
When it premiered in 2012.
But by season three, how do you guys, like, because he's such a cult phenomenon, how do you find... You know, there were some places where I see y'all like went to like Redneck down south. Like, how do you?
I didn't do those. I didn't do those travel ones.
Okay,
and that's more on production and on that side of the game as far as trying to preserve that. But yeah, the early stuff that wasn't really too much of an issue. He was able to kind of catch people off guard with a lot of the early stuff. It was a.
Has there ever been a situation so dangerous that it never made it on air? Like, whoa, we're a TV show. Oh, okay.
I mean, I think he's gotten arrested before. It's been some crazier ones when I haven't been there that I've seen. And there might be some other stuff that's untold that I don't even know about if I'm not there. Mm. But
you held face real good. Like, the shit was normal. I was like, why? Damn, how did he do that?
It's time. I mean, we edit out when I break, but I do break sometimes. But you just I think sometimes you just bite the inside of your cheek to hold in a laugh and shit. It's a little trick. You just got to grit the teeth.
Like, one of the coolest things I learned in doing that show was how vomit is made. So there's a husband and wife team, and it's like they have their own ice cream truck, and what they do is they provide... Well, no, they provide, if you ever watch a show, there's a brand of potato chips that looks like Lay's, but it's called Let's. Okay. And you'll see it. Just look up Let's potato chips. It'll be on Community. It's been on, like, Scandal. Like, that's their trademark. Like, any random snacks, and you'll look, like, in the background, be like, Let's Crackers or whatever. Like, that's how they do it. But they also make, blood and vomit. Like, he handles the art for fake cereal and fake bread and all the foods, and she handles vomit.
Smart
and
business.
So she rolled in this like cart, and she's like, so what's your favorite cereal? And I was like, huh? And I was like, all right, Golden Grahams and Captain Crunch and Trix.
Peanut butter.
Right. And then she'll take all that and put it in a blender, and that was my...
Vomit?
That was my throw up. It was a cereal.
Wow.
Yeah. And sometimes they'll put the pump, in your hand, so it's like that sort of thing.
Okay.
And
so
I had to throw up on the show. I don't even know if that made the final cut, but there was a point where like, yeah, I vomited on the drum set. So it was so tasty.
Yeah. Oh, it tasted good?
Yeah, it tasted real good.
Yeah, because they put the cereal, all the cereals, yeah.
It was all cereal. And we'll be right back after these.
Brought to you by Let's Potato Chips. All right.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonsigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so we're back with Questlove Supreme. All right, so I'm going to pick a new approach to a question that I know you're tired of answering. I'm not even going to ask you the story about this. No, but I'm going to ask you, do you finally feel as though the scarlet letter, quote, hashtag, of that situation,
yeah,
is now in your rearview mirror? Or seriously, or do you wake up at night like,
No, it's not in the rear view. No, sometimes people just hit me. It's like people hit me up freshly mad, like they just found out about.
Yeah, wait, to just, this day?
Yeah, just new message. Fuck you, man. What the fuck? And it's just like, come on, man. I've heard every reaction you could hear to the whole thing. And so it's just kind of, oh, that goes in this bucket. Like, because I've heard all of it from, and I've heard anything you could say about it pretty much in 2014 and 2015. So it's just, it's just one of those things.
How did you work through that? Because I just imagine it's crazy to just one day just wake up being the most famous person in the world for something that is totally unrelated to you, you know what I mean?
And that was public knowledge, but never really.
Right.
It was a wild time, man. It was, it was, that was the first time I would be on TV without knowing I was about to be on TV. And so that was, I'm just chilling and watching, and like, what? CBS, man, Hannibal? I'm like, wait, man, I ain't know what. Because before that, it was just my TV appearances was, you know, Eric Andre, it was my comedy special. Mm-hmm. It was my late night stuff where, like, I know I'm going to be on Comedy Central at 9:30. Check me out. And so that was
I'm
the first
CNN
time that.
I'm on CNN at 6 and 7.
Yeah, so that was jarring. It was a lot of, it was heavy, man, because it kind of, we pushed stuff back because of it, because we were getting ready to announce my Comedy Central show, but it was already in motion for a year or something before that, but then because that was happening, it was like, oh, if we announced then, it looked like it's, I got the deal because of that. Some people still think that, but it is what it is.
Oh, so you wanted to hold it back so it didn't look like
they
you
wanted
were
to, yeah.
It was, oh, I they mean, wanted
we,
to roll
yeah,
it
we wanted
like,
to drop it right in that. That right. I don't know, but they just, you know, we definitely, things were adjusted and moved around because of it. And I think it took up a lot of headspace creatively. And probably, you know, in some form affected the work I created at that time and maybe even now. But
you didn't have nobody to lean on in a way, because you were like the first to do something like that to someone who had such a...
It was a viral moment that probably introduced the term cancel culture, I guess.
Yeah, for somebody who people looked at in a totally opposite way. So it's kind of like, who do you lean on when you are stressed about that? Because who been through it?
Yeah, it was...
Who did you call? Yeah, who was on your side? Who was your squad?
Gambling, alcohol, heavy, like heavy spending, like
those friends,
just
vices.
Those old,
like, like getting private jets just to say I got it. Just like, motherfucker, I had this shit already.
Right. When would you say it kind of ended, or not, I mean, not ended, because you know you say you're still getting messages, but when do you feel like you kind of worked through and it's like, all right, you know?
Can you in 2023? Can you get through a week without someone bringing it up?
Yeah, I can get through a week. It's not something that's heavy like that. I'm chill with what it is now, but the initial shit was crazy, because it was, oh man, this is intense. And it was, you know, people, you know, random death threats and shit. I'm gonna see you at your show, and then I'm talking shit like I'm like come see me there, motherfucker.
About Dr. Hustle? That's crazy.
Who's defending him?
In the beginning, we were kind of, you know, let's keep it funky. Like, I know the black folks, but I mean, like, what you doing putting our business in public?
Right. Well, I forgot about that part.
Right hand, but that was heavy.
So, for you, though, like, in terms of, like, doing movies and whatnot, mm-hmm. like, I always feel like, for you, what is the end game? Because I've yet to see, like, have you thought about doing your own comedy show, like your own, well,
series.
I know sitcoms are like, what would we call it now?
Series.
IG Live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it still a hustle, or is it like, where do you want to land the plane where it's like, this is what I'm definitively known for?
Right. Yeah, there's no singular thing right now. So it's pretty fragmented. I'm not too moved by film like that, as far as me wanting to make my own. I like docs. I did the one doc, the Hannibal Takes Edinburgh. We did one for my festival, Isola Fest. I think the event space and just live, so and helping others do great shows too. So I got the lease on the old Knitting Factory space. So I'm gonna be taking that over.
That's right. You're back. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm gonna be running that spot and just
congratulations.
So I think
the old Knitting Factory, the one in
Williamsburg.
City. Oh, and okay, the one
yeah.
in Brooklyn. Gotcha,
so
yeah,
got a 10-year lease there.
This is a weird side question. Did old girl work out for you, or did you work?
Yeah, I talked with her. She's dope. Right, yeah, cool. I got when I'm back out in New York, we're meeting in person. But
so you're literally going to run that spot?
I'm gonna run that spot. Yeah, and probably do a monthly.
What caused that? That used to be the old home of OK Player. Well, yep. OK Player used to be upstairs. Yeah.
The space was still vacant. Knitting Factory left there August of last year. And then the realtor reached out. Hey, he was the new, I guess they had one for a while. And then he took it over as far as marketing it. He reached out to me. Hey, man, I know you used to do shows here. What you think about it? And initially, I was like, hell no, man. Why is it still open? And what the fuck going on? Why has it been open for a year? And then I just kind of started, you know, running the numbers in my head. I said, this could be something really cool, man, just to, and it's a great story to, you know, I hosted, I did the first night there in 2009, which led to me hosting my comedy night there. My comedy night was on Sundays because that was my only off day from SNL.
Right. Were you part of, you and Tara did hip hop karaoke one night? Like, I remember DJ Tara.
Yeah.
Were you there were you running that hip hop karaoke thing?
No, we just did that special for my birthday. That was my 30th birthday. Y'all came through.
Oh, I thought that was like a weekly thing.
No,
I was like, oh, this is dope.
No, we just did it up for my birthday. And yeah, it was 2013.
Okay.
Thank you for coming through, by the way. That was fun. But yeah, man, I'm hyped about that because it just gives me. I love going to shows and seeing dope shows.
So what's your vision, like, in your mind? This is dope because, you know, folks like you don't do whole venues. It's great.
Yeah.
So you can just put whatever you want.
Yeah, just to, you know, I want to get the, a dope screen in there, like to get the visuals right, just, you know, really make it my own. And it's 300 caps, so that's a great.
What kind of shows you thinking?
All types of, like, just a dope artist, man. You know, book to my taste.
I forgot, and also, Ninny Factory's music also.
Yeah.
But I thought you were just going to turn it.
Nah, it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be everything, you know.
Everything you want.
More, yeah, it'd be probably more music, you know what I mean? It would be leaner.
When you're working out comedy in New York, because I know that there's different communities up there, like established Comedy Cellar and then kind of the Vegas-y, I don't want to say hack. I don't know what to call the Vegas type of comedian, but that's always like a Midtown Manhattan, Caroline sort of thing.
Right.
And then there's like the Brooklyn set where like Wyatt or, you know, I guess they call it alternative. Is Brooklyn really considered like the alternative comedy hub? Like, I don't think I would see Chris at any spot in Brooklyn. So
Chris came through Knit a bunch.
Word?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Chris came through Knit. All right. Dave came through Knit.
Well, there's some people that just have no fear and go, but like, is it still not segregated, but is it still like the alt comedians don't mess with the Vegas comedians, who don't mess with the whatever the A-list that Comedy Cellar represents?
I'm not one to speak on the current scene right now, because I haven't lived in New York full time since 2016, 17. I've been out west. Okay. So I'm not really even well versed. I just kind of, I just started doing comedy in New York recently, and I'll pop out a cellar. You know, I'm really not one to speak on all the dynamics.
Is the cellar a spot that you trust? Because most comedians tell me that you have to work out in a spot that is hard. Like Chris is like, no, I'm going to Palm Springs, Florida.
Right.
There's a spot in Ohio. Mm-hmm. He wants an audience that he doesn't resonate with whatsoever. And if they can laugh, then he knows he has something. But if you're in the Comedy Cellar, then it's like your boys are there egging you. Like, yeah, that's dope. And then it doesn't work.
For me, just doing an hour on the road, now you trying to headline, so that's where I don't really even do that many 15 minutes. Like, pop up on my show, and I want to do an hour because some of the pieces and stories now is 20, 25 minutes on their own, so I'm not going to figure that out there. So I think just working on it, you get better as a headliner by headlining. And so this recent run, it made me realize before I put out Miami Nights, my last tour was all theaters, which is cool and it's nice to be able to do, but it made me realize I ain't really, like, really hammering a show in the club and just, you know, getting the timing right and doing five in a weekend and having to, you know, perform through, you know, waitresses and whatever, walking through and just, you know, get the show tight and then taking it to theaters, which I'm doing now. And so I'm noticing a difference in the quality and as far as just making the show bulletproof through just working on it. So it's been, I'm hyped, man, because I've been, you know, I've just been moving around and it's an exciting time creatively.
I wanted you to talk about specifically Miami Nights. Mm. And, you know, your decision to put it out on YouTube and just talk through that whole experience, because it was something, for me, it was really inspiring. I mean, we talked in private about it, but it was really inspiring. I think a lot of artists, it would inspire them to hear that story.
Miami Nights, it was, a lot of it was, the decision making around it was definitely based in emotion because of, you know, it was me dealing with my false arrest and all of that. And so, you know, going to the marketplace, it was tough for me to put a price on it. And so, like, they say this amount, I'm like, motherfucker, what are you talking about? It's because I couldn't just, it was not business in that way to me. And so that was a big part of it. And then just doing the negotiation in pandemic and having a lot of time to think. We were about to go to Netflix. Netflix talking about it. It was delivered to Netflix. They were subtitling that shit, and I pulled it.
Why?
Because I was just thinking about it, man. It was short-term vision, long-term vision, where it didn't look like the road was happening in the fall. And so, and he was signing away the entire thing. And I didn't think the price point after sitting around thinking about it because I wasn't in motion.
You're your own manager?
At that time, I did not have management. I had agent. Yeah, I had agent. Okay. There was, but it was just, you know, yeah, me and my thoughts was my manager. and so it was just somewhere I didn't. I'm happy with the decision. I wish I just did it earlier because I know they were salty and I had some. I got relationships over there that was before they were even at Netflix. But so I decided to go YouTube just to keep the ownership of it and put it out that way.
YouTube ownership is like, cause I was wondering. I'm like, don't they still own?
No,
something?
YouTube doesn't own anything.
Okay.
And then I took it down from YouTube too because I just, it was weird releasing something in the pandemic and not having any live energy around it and movement. And then so now it's just down and I be thinking I'm gonna put it back up and but it's no, I don't have no urgency. And I kind of like the idea of having a special that people can't really
no
see.
No one can't find it. Like that one thing in your canon that.
Nah, you create your own scarcity.
Yeah. And so it's just I don't want to, you know, I like just having, you know, maybe who knows when it'll go out eventually, but it's not, I have to do it like that. It's just,
well, you know. I'll ask you, cause I still say that's the two things that I've not seen a comedian do yet. And I feel like comedy should be something which a comedian will attempt to go in uncharted territory. And so there was what's his name's boy who did the comedy special with no audience.
Drew Giraffe? Something.
Yeah, Drew.
I can't remember. Right. White guy.
Drew Michael, yeah.
Drew Michael, yeah, yeah.
But also, I believe Silverman once did a special in which it had to have been at least maybe like 18 people in the room.
Right.
Like, but it was just an intimate, which I felt like, oh, that must be hard, like to try to make 18 people gut laugh in that manner. But, I mean, are there, for you, is there any desire to figure that out, or is it just like, nah, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, like, just do
it. You're talking about just doing a different, messing with the format?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to just try it, man.
I think the drive-through shows you kind of, I mean, the drive-in shows you did.
Yeah, so why kinda didn't you like the, well, you said disastrous drive-through.
man, dog, that shit was just.
They respond with beep, beep, beep.
Yeah, the honking, and it's just a disconnect. There's no, you have.
You see faces.
You can't see faces. People either in their cars or sitting on a, there's no connection. And so that, you know, especially, you know, I was rusty too. You know what I mean? With no real, and so then jumping back out in my first gig is nothing I practiced for the past, you know, 18 years or whatever. So it was just a weird experience. I remember Cleveland was the first show. It was facing a highway. And it was a train track to the right. So a stage was facing the highway. Audience didn't see it. So I'm seeing FedEx trucks, and then the train got really active during my set, and I hadn't even been on stage in months. So I'm like, whoa, this is terrible. But because the audience is listening to radio, that's not their experience. So they're not bothered by the train. They're not even seeing the trucks. So I'm just motherfucker on stage complaining about trucks and trains. And so it was just one of those where I was like, man, I wanted to, and I was like, man, we got about six more of these. And it was funny to flip because initially I was super excited to get that tour going just to get something going. We out here. Yeah. And then I actually announced because somebody else was taking too long. It made sense that they was taking too long because it was a dicey situation. So they was thinking about it. And so I was like, no, we about to announce. And I announced. And then we get out there, and I said, man, I'm going to cancel the rest of these. What am I doing? We kind of figured it out, and it got better, but it still wasn't. It wasn't an ideal. Yeah. It wasn't an ideal situation. As far as just flipping stuff, I mean, you make it, you know, we did the Hannibal Takes Edinburgh thing where that was a bunch of shows in one place and adding the documentary element. I think people like story and seeing that part of it. I got another idea for something for a special that involves some traveling and some moving around. So there is ways to flip it because there's been so much just stand up done, just somebody standing on a stage. So anytime you could figure out a different visual element or something else, you know, it just makes it be creative because the jokes is going to be the jokes no matter where you do them. So it's just how to figure out how to flip it.
Man, I wanted you to talk about Isola Fest that you put up because that shit was insane. So, how do you get however many thousands of people that you got to a small town that, you know, you probably couldn't even find on a map?
Yeah. Isola Fest, December 2019, I had the idea. I have a little club. Me and my cousin own a club in Isola, Mississippi. That's where my mom's side of the family's from. And so I had the idea to do I wanted to do some shows down there just to draw attention.
Population of this town is
what? 1,000 or less. Super small town. But I said, you know what? You do the right shit, people show up. And so I wanted to do a show down there. And then I hit up T-Pain expecting him to say no. It was really just a practice call.
What?
Just a practice call. Just practicing my pitch. Yeah. I'm going to let him say no. I hit up T-Pain. Hey, you want to do the show in Isola?
Shit, I never thought of that. I need that advice right the fuck now. I'm doing this shit wrong. Yeah. I got to call up Redhead Kingpin and the FBI. Right. Practice on them. Then hit Dr. Dre. Right. Get it now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm expecting to know. I said, you want to do the show in Isola? I'm thinking of this. He said, yeah, I do. I said, what? And so then I escalate from being a one-night thing to a three-day festival, which was unnecessary, but we got the memories and the experience. And then we was only doing it on 3 weeks' notice because the play was to do it in December. So this was, I guess, late November that I was trying to execute this. And then we were going to do it properly the following Memorial Day weekend, now that we established it and everything. And then, and we did. It was cool, man. It's a lot of challenges you could imagine is to doing a show in rural Mississippi, but it was dope to have it come together after, you know, because it's, you know, brought a lot of artists down and people. It wasn't thousands of folks. It was, you know, a few hundred. But it was people came from everywhere to the, you know, a lot of spots in the South, and the folks that went to it hadn't seen anything like that there before. So, you know, you could see that genuine appreciation. I'm gonna get that back rolling and do a lot of updates to the club too. Once I get my Brooklyn stuff going, the goal is to have like kind of stuff trickle down to there, and maybe I'll start booking folks on the Isola Brooklyn run.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, for real.
But I want to, you know, just have multiple venues and build like that, and just, you know, really really do some cool stuff in the live space.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you did the Spider-Man movie?
Yeah. Which one?
I recall that at one of the premieres, you had sent a sub to go in your place.
Right.
Where did that come from?
MF Doom.
Yeah. I guess partially that. It was just really, I was on set at TAG, and they needed me for that day, and I didn't want to not have any presence there. You know, I didn't want to just be, I can't make it. It's a Spider-Man
premiere. So how did you?
So he looked like him?
How did you? No, I don't think he.
He didn't really look like me. Just a little bit taller. He was bald.
How did you find him, and what was the game plan? And did you warn the Spider-Man people that you're sending a sub in your place?
No, I found him. I tweeted it out, and then I wasn't getting. I said, "Hey, I need a lookalike."
I tweeted it out.
I love this. I need a lookalike. You know, have decent comedic timing. I forgot what the ad was, but put that out. And then it was a bunch of folks that was emailing that weren't serious white folks. It's like, come on, man, I'm trying to do something here. Come on, man. I know we're messing around.
Was he able to fool anyone in the press line?
Then he reached out. He had actually been a stand-in for me on something for the MTV Movie Awards or VMAs on something
nice.
I shot.
Okay.
So he could be trusted to not do nothing too crazy out there. You know what I mean? Some people might get in that environment.
Craig Robinson, somebody trying to keep working.
He kept it cool. And so then I just sent him all of my credentials and everything that they sent me. So when he pulled up with the car, you know what I mean, and security, he could just show that.
They fell for it.
And so, I mean.
That's some Andy Kaufman shit.
You know what I mean? And then he got there, did an interview. It was crazy seeing it. Progress like that because we were watching him on live because there was a lot of downtime on the TAG set, so that's what I put that together and just watching that.
I don't think nobody's ever done this before either.
And
you know what?
I don't think
I've. Here's the funny thing. That was done to me before.
You were like Kamau Bell. Where are you?
No, Kamau Bell. Here's the hilarious thing. I thought I told this story before. Letterman had hosted the Emmy Awards. And it was disastrous, or at least critics thought it was a disaster job. So kind of Letterman's middle finger to the Academy, because, shockers, they'd invite me to the 1996 one. And so he was nominated for, like, Best Late Night Show, whatever. So he was like, I'm going to send out a sub. Now, this is Tupac died, September 13th?
Nice, yeah.
Okay, so this is... Let's say September 5th of 96, I went to the store to buy a suit because this is the very first time that I'm drumming for D'Angelo for the Brown Sugar Platinum Party. This is when, like, this is the very time, first time me, Pino, like, everyone's doing that. And Letterman happened to be in that store buying a suit for, if you remember the character on the show, Larry Bud Melman. Do you remember Larry?
Sure.
Right. Legendary character on the Letterman show. And so Letterman's looking at me in all my primitive exotic glory, like this, you know, 6'3" Afro guy walking in. He doesn't know who or what I am. No one knows. And they were just like, hey, would you like the suit? And I was inadvertently part of the sketch. And then they were like, what are you doing on Sunday? And literally the thing flips and Larry Melman and I are like David Letterman's representatives for the Emmys.
What?
And all I remember was, who's old boy from Scrubs? I'm sorry. I know Scrubs as in the sound effects.
Donald
Faison.
Donald Faison, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the moment where Donald, like, Faison was, like, in tears, like, Tupac just got shot. And, like, literally.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it, like, that's how it, but I was Letterman's stand-in. Yeah, and then maybe a week later, the show realized, like, you know, this isn't a random guy. Like, this guy's an actual, like, they put him on. But then.
But you got to go to the.
That made me, well, yeah, but then it also made me a friend of the show. And then that's, the Roots could not get on Letterman at that time during that Do You Want More Illadelph period. So that kind of opened the door. So, yes, I was David Letterman's proxy.
I like that you know Scrubs because of the sound effects. That's a whole thing.
Right, I didn't know
what show. I was like, that Thundercats?
No, between Parker Lewis Can't Lose and Scrubs, like they were just, you know, him and
Gentlemen, cinema, synchronized
watches. In between transition scenes.
Well,
gotcha.
Not that. I mean, but also they would just show up like, hey, where's your...
Right, you're right, you're right.
Right, sound effects.
Yeah,
so,
sorry. All right,
yeah, I don't call it Scrubs. I just call it...
But I wanted to ask you, Hannibal, when you going out on tour, when touring with rappers, what do you pick up? Like, what do you learn? You know what I'm saying? Because stepping into a new kind of performance. No. Yeah. What's some of the stuff you're watching for and you learn when you watch other MCs perform?
Just the just rapping with force, you know what I mean? And clarity. Yeah, just that part of it, just make and just create moments for yourself, like, because at this point people are listening, but they don't know my songs, and so I just can't rap at them blindly.
They know it, yeah, yeah.
And so it's just kind of creating the moments, either acapellas or you walk them into the song, like explaining with the story, or hey, here's the hook to this, or you know those parts of it, because it's forcing me. I can't just lean on y'all know this shit. They do not know that shit, but they're but they willing to learn.
That's true.
And so that part of it of just the energy and just you know, yeah, this you know figuring out the pacing of a set and
who are some MCs that you've watched though, and you've been like, you know what? He got that. I need to work on that myself.
Fonte.
Okay. Fonte. I was thinking that when you was talking.
Yeah,
Fonte is a charismatic motherfucker.
Yes, he is. Oh, on stage?
You
it's a problem.
Say.
Yeah.
Fonte introed me in Raleigh. Raleigh, in 2013. Because I asked him, you want to do something? He's like, I'll do the intro. And then he went up and introed me. He was like, ladies and gentlemen, everybody, he got everybody standing up.
Did it too good.
It was great. I was like, I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know you could start a show like that.
I swear, for it was a period of time. I was damn near Hannibal's agent and booking agent when he came to Raleigh. He called me that same show. He called me. I got a call the night before. Hey man, I'm coming to Raleigh. You know what I'm saying? You know some ballerinas?
You were the man in Houston?
I was the guy in Houston.
You was the man in Houston.
Bro, he's like, yo, you know some ballerinas? I'm like, yes, I got this bit I want to do. I'm going to just rap, but I want ballerinas with me. I'm like.
And you did, didn't
I'm like,
you?
Bro, let me see what I can do. And I called some, I knew some people. And we had like 3-4 ballerinas. That was the night Damien was open for you. Damien Lemon.
Yeah, Damien.
Oh, my God. I went to college with Damien. That was
a great show.
You went
show.
To college?
Motherfucker! I'm sorry.
I love that you know ballerinas.
I was like, he called again, and the funniest thing, this was maybe a couple years later, you hit me again. I was like, yo, man, so like, I'm doing a show here, wherever. I need somebody to open for me. And I had a homie of mine that was, you know, making some noise. He was trying to, you know, get in the game. And I just hit him like, yo, bro, you want to open for Hannibal tonight? He was like, yeah. And he went and did it, and I hit Hannibal the next day. I said, how'd it go? He was like, oh, that nigga bombed. He's like, oh, he wasn't good at all. I was like, all right.
It just was, you know.
Different kind of intro.
Did he have potential, though, Hannibal? Did he have potential?
Potential to bomb some more. Yeah.
You had to ask me right afterwards. It's been a couple years.
Okay.
That was 2017, but it was, you know.
Yeah, and it was funny because you were laughing like hell just talking about him bombing. I thought it was the funniest shit. But nah, man, when we did the run we did, the LB run in March.
Yeah.
And I hit you up and I was like, yo, man, you want to do it? Because me and Pooh were just thinking, we was like, yo, we didn't want to have just a traditional quote unquote like rap. Yeah. We wanted to show people like, look, man, this is really an experience. And, you know, you had sent me some of your music, and I think you had first just put out the SU Tune EP, and you had sent me stuff, and I was like, okay, like, this shit is actually, like, good. So, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I hit you, and you were down to do it. And I remember that night. I watched the show that night. I watched maybe all, let's say, for, like, the last maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, because I had to get ready. But, I watched the show, man, and it was so dope to see. You had the crowd. You had them, you know what I'm saying? Because they, you know, our crowd, like, they, if you was whack, they'd let you know, you know what I mean? But you was with them, and even afterwards, you know, we had people coming out. They was like, yo, that was a great show. We had a great time. And I didn't even know Hannibal Rap. You damn near got a deal that night. I don't even know if you realize. It was a dude was like, yo, if he want to do something, whatever. You know what I mean? But I just always appreciate it, man, that, you know, you always, like, looked out for me and just, you know, we always just connected. You threw each other opportunities. And so that was just a great show that we did. And I really appreciate
that
you coming
through. That was fun, man. Thank you for having me.
Are you looking for a music deal?
I'd be open to the conversation. Yeah, I'd be open to the conversation. I could use some help lifting.
Somebody has approached you already.
No, nobody's approached. Yeah, we'll just, you know, we
keep rocking. Get your leverage up.
Yeah, man. I book myself for my
keep it a passion.
Yeah.
Where does the name come from?
SU. SU is
everybody think you're Nigerian, so
it's the trickster god from Nigerian mythology. I looked up African mythology. Man.
I was hoping. I was like, this sounds so Nigerian. Man. But I didn't want to put that on Hannibal.
Because... Okay.
What's up?
No, I once got scammed by a Nigerian.
I mean, who has not?
Yeah. This is, join the club.
Yeah. Yeah. Of the continent. Like, the literally called.
$20 million.
Yeah. I have a question.
In a bank account.
Yeah.
So just in general, though, you do so many different types of things, voiceover, acting, podcasts, music, comedy, etc. And I'm sure they all have their own individual challenges. But at some point, does it all just become one thing or just become entertainment and you just say, I'm just going to entertain?
Yeah, well, right now, the focus is kind of really shrunk into just most music and comedy. Is the main thing. I haven't been really acting like I did. I did one thing last year. I did What We Do in the Shadows. Did a day. I really ain't acting on nothing if the ask is more than a day. Like, if we can't get it done in a day, I don't want to do it. I don't care what it is. And so.
Damn. Okay.
Talk heavy.
I get it. It's just hurry up and wait. It's just hurry up and wait.
But so with the music and comedy, what's been cool is some of the concepts from comedy, you know, that I just alluded to have become songs. Like veneers was just like a throwaway joke. Like, yeah, I got these TVT veneers. And then something else, you know, struck where I was like, oh, that could be a song. And even now I tell this, you know, I tell this whole story in my stand-up about, you know, going to my grandmother's funeral, leaving the funeral, and then being in, like, just driving aimlessly. I ended up stopping in Shreveport, gambling, drinking, and it's a whole thing. And I'm leaving Shreveport. This guy gets shot at the gas station. While I'm there, he dies, and this whole thing. It's a wild day. Where I was like, whoa, just because I ended up drinking too much and gambling at the casino, they took my keys, even though I wasn't driving, and it held up, and then I ended up being a goddamn murder witness. And so... it was a wild, wild week. And so, but then I talk about that in comedy in one way, and then I also talk about it in the song, the same story, but then the comedy has different expectations than the storytelling in the music. Where in the music, I just focus on the details of the story and moving it along. There's not much humor in it where, you know, with that type of stuff in comedy, you got to flip it or it's just going to be real depressing and dark in the room. But, you know, it's a little, so it's just having those, it's the same thing as certain ideas for a stand-up lend themselves to a sketch or something might expand to a movie or it might be a conversation topic. It's just about how you choose to position any idea.
How did you link with Kiefer? That he's one of my favorite, like, Kiefer's producers, dope. Musicians. Like, Kiefer's so dope, man. How did that hook up?
I heard he produced Yada Yada, Anderson .Paak, and I heard that track, and I just love Pac performance and writing on that, and I love the beat too, just the feeling of the keys. And so I just reached out to him in in 2020. Yo, this is dope. When I'm starting to do music, and he sent me a few beats, and the one for Kept About Three, it's just the way his chords are, they just really take you to a thoughtful place, and you start just like, oh, he's like, yeah, and another thing, oh yeah, I remember. It just brings a lot. Like his music brings a lot out of me as a writer. It's another track we have the two that just kind of it puts you in that reflective place. And so yeah, he's a really dope artist, and just his music, he just really makes me realize, oh, I got a lot to say. Sometimes you hear stuff, you're like, oh, was it? But when the right beat of his, it just everything starts flowing. Yeah,
you know, often Shazam songs that I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, who they are, and for some reason I've been very late to the QL Chris and
Quelle Chris.
I always say QL.
Yeah.
Quelle Chris and the Jean Grey project.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Oh, that shit was brilliant, man.
Yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ. And then I was like, shit. Like, I religiously read Pitchfork and I missed that review.
Jean's
like,
She's back.
No, this was from a year.
This was like, is I think 2017 or 18 or 19.
Something like that, yeah.
But I heard it somewhere and it was the song, John, that you were on. Like, are you ever going to work with them again? Or
I got a couple unreleased joints with Quelle, actually. I got a bunch of stuff that I got to just start letting fly.
Nah, man, you, Quelle, Open My Eagle, like, y'all are, like, just some of my favorite artists, man. Like, y'all dudes, like, I really fuck with y'all, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's off the beaten path, but it's still, you know, it's quality still soulful shit. And quality, yeah.
Yeah, it's quality shit.
Quelle's a dope producer, man. He's a dope producer. Where it's one track that sound like a soul track, I had it for a while, and I said, what's the sample on this? And then he sent me what the sample was, and it was just some just Japanese cartoon theme song. But I thought it was
that's
a 70s.
One brand. That's one brand.
I thought it was a 70s soul sample or something. Nope. Right. It's not what you think it is. But it was dope, that type of sampling where it's not, where he completely flipped it and put it in another world, you know.
Before I close, I would like to ask you, and I guess he went on record about it before, but can you talk about like how sobriety has changed you and transformed you to who you are now, just like as a family man. And
oh, I'm not sober.
So I was waiting.
I fell right for
now. That was the best shit.
That was great. Ever.
No, I saw this interview where you were like really getting
sober on certain things.
Yeah, I was sober at that interview. Oh. I was sober around that time, but that was probably, I'm guessing that was 2019, 2020 or something like that. Yeah.
This is the perfect ending of an interview. Yeah. Nah, yeah. I swear to God, like, you gave a really heartfelt answer about, like,
no, at that time,
life series and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, well, I had a good run, 3 years.
Welcome back, motherfucker.
By the way, yes. I want to apologize for, you know, I ran on the stage when y'all were doing an event sponsored by Bud Light.
Yo, nigga, I forgot about that shit.
What? I need this story now.
Oh, my God. It's really not a big deal. It's like, you know, you do those, it was like, what, Super Bowl time or something like
that? It was South by Southwest.
And, same thing. You know, and when it's a corporate gig.
Totally same.
Sure. There's regular gigs, and then there's corporate gigs.
Right, okay.
And, you know, Hannibal was there, so we were like, hey, just get on mic and talk. And he talked about the taste of the beer was not too savory.
Oh, shit.
And, but it was like in front of the president and
he
all
did
that stuff.
Kid Rock Bud Light moment. I like it. All right.
Now, Sean G was catching a heart attack because he didn't want to drop the bag, but we was laughing our ass off.
This is the story. No, y'all didn't.
Hey, you didn't see them laugh, huh?
No, this is.
He remembers it differently.
I remember it completely. I didn't ask to go on stage. Y'all didn't tell me. I just went up there.
You Seth probably Herzog, didn't even know.
Yeah, Seth Herzog was hosting. Right. It wasn't specifically. It was a special drink that they had, like Bud Lime or something.
Yeah.
And I remember like, hey, what? Y'all ain't got no other shit in here?
he was like Ruby. He was like Ozzie D. Ruby Davis.
Ozzie Davis.
Okay, and I learned what a spoonerism was 2 days ago. So that's an example of a spoonerism.
Oh, okay.
Where you say
jumble the name.
Yeah,
instead of fuck up a word.
Where I call you Conte Pullman.
Oh, okay.
You
know what I mean? Okay.
But people call it old.
If he ever calls you that, let me know.
Yeah, that's the sound of a stroke.
That sounds like a totally different situation. All right, sorry.
Yeah, but it's I maybe because the years have went by. Wait, was that a serious moment or?
It wasn't serious, but it was just, it was, I think that was 2017. But then after, now that I understand the economics of traveling with a band, then I felt even more bad about it. I was like, oh. They got like 20 people with them.
I mean, we never lost the account.
I know.
The Bud Light people were definitely, I believe, up in arms, and Sean was like a little nervous, but whatever. But
they've had bigger battles since.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah,
listen. Well, I'm glad we got to make this happen. Do you have anything?
That shirt, the Hebrew.
Yeah, this is Hebrew. Yeah, Hebrews. He had a installation in Chicago in 2020, Nevermore. It was a bunch of his art and different pieces.
He's one of my favorite artists. I just bought a piece off of him. We bought a couple weeks ago.
I better put us on Hebrew, okay?
Hebrew Brantley,
but not spelled like Hebrew.
Not EW, but HEBRU. That's Hebrew Brantley.
Not like our people. Different Hebrew.
Yeah,
different
but is he the different people? Tribe. Oh, yeah, different tribe.
Nah, he's not. Yeah, he's one of us.
Okay,
you know
okay.
Yeah. Different tribe.
Same thing, you know.
But yeah, but nah, he's
trying to see what this conversation is going to figure out which theme I'm about to play.
I was about to talk about original Hebrew, so you might want to play mine because I did a real black.
I went to Hebrew studio when I first moved to LA in 2019. He was showing me pieces of the thing. And then he was like, yeah, this is $100,000. I was like, oh, I didn't know. It was like, I knew you were doing good. He was like, here, I'm going to gift you these prints, brother. I was like, thank you very much. It's out of my budget.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know he was Brantley. Yeah.
He's dope.
Conte.
Yeah.
There's... we're just... Conte Pullman.
Conte Pullman. Yeah, that's my bizarro persona. But nah, man, I'm glad you we finally got a chance to do this. You've just always just been one of my favorite comedians, and just
second episode.
I got a list of a couple of other folks that you can do what you did for us with the other dude. I just was thinking that. That's all I was thinking. Oh, okay. We'll talk about it later.
Wait,
what are you talking about?
I'll tell you.
Talking about other folks for me to.
Y'all,
play us out.
Yeah. Where did this come from?
The harmonica?
Yes.
This, I got one. We were just in, I think it was, beginning of 2020. I was at Guitar Center with Aaron Allen Kane, and she was like, let's get harmonicas. And I was like, why not? And so then I was just.
And it was just called you.
And then I was just playing a harmonica. And then I think I was playing it online, just joking around. And then Frederick was like, let me get you a good harmonica.
Oh, wow. Frederick. You got like,
yeah.
Wow.
He was like, let me get you a good harmonica. So he sent this one. And then before I was about to come here for the podcast, I saw it. I was like, I'm going to fuck him up with the harmonica.
What other secret talents do you have?
Talents, but I just want to... I'm working on drums. I got a drum kit at the crib. Hey,
okay.
And so, and I want to learn keys. And I think I'll make my best music after I got kind of proficiency at an instrument for 3 or 4 years, you know. And so I do want to, at some point, be able to drum in a band or sit in and not have people be like,
shut
fucking
up.
You know what I mean? I want to be able to do that. And I think it'll definitely help my production and music creation. So I think once I, keys and drums, it'll take the music up.
At the time in the pandemic, we did a bit where you were cooking and whatnot. So how's your, once the pandemic was over, have you stopped your...
I'll tell you about that, because that, I was, when we, you did, that was the Questlove, what was the name of that?
Yeah, Questlove food thing.
I had a misunderstanding on what the demands for that was gonna be, and I remember
the assignment was,
because I was like, yeah, I'll do that, and so I had a little bit of mushrooms because I was like, yeah, we just out here, but I didn't know what, and then I opened. They said the kid is outside your door, and I opened my door, and it's lights and a camera. Oh, I was like, oh no, I ain't know.
So I had asked. This was during the pandemic, I guess the Food Network had asked me to put together an hour special asking my notable friends, for recipes and whatnot.
What did you make?
I forget. I just remember.
Except with mushrooms.
I just remember the panic of having these people on Zoom, and they were like, "Yo, put the lights there, and can you plug it in?" And just I was like, "Oh man, I didn't know I was about to be a gaffer up in here."
Do you remember
the part where I was so overwhelmed? Where I was just like, "Man, if you just." Close
but
the laptop.
You successfully cooked it, right?
If you just close the laptop, it's everything's over.
Damn.
I was like, no, you can't do that. The Questlove, tough it out, man. Just
it was kicking this, in. Dog.
Now I got to look this awesome. Up because you might have made some eggs.
No, I don't even know. I think I just showed you the pantry or something, or it wasn't that.
Yeah, I see your kitchen, and
yeah.
I swore you made something. I know Tiffany has made fried chicken on the air fryer.
What did Hannibal make?
The fact that Hannibal doesn't even remember.
No, I didn't make it. I didn't make anything.
You just showed your bare seasonings.
I just showed some seasonings and just waited for my high to go down. Sweated on camera, set up lights. I remember setting up lights more than anything.
Gaffed, rigged.
All right, so gaffing is your secret talent.
I know you stopped drinking for a minute.
Yeah.
You have like other drugs that you just prefer and more so now, like mushrooms more so than alcohol or weed
like
or whatever?
Shrooms. I'm noticing like I think on the road now, I think with the drinking, I think it's adjusting. I got sober in a certain time, and now I'm adjusting to a different level of stimuli and a different life. And so that's, we're doing music and another level of activity where the traveling and that part of it is what's sort of getting me. But when I'm here and I'm at home, I'm in the studio, I'm just, seeing my daughter. So it doesn't pull me like that.
But how old is she now?
She two and some change. Doing some change. She got some. She got strong. She has strong musical opinions now.
Oh,
not
wow!
That well, one. Then. She really want to hear Moana, one of the Moana songs. And if you play the wrong one, not that one. She used to vibe to my stuff, but now it's like nah, not that one. I'll be playing her other stuff.
You got to the age of seven to program your child to have good taste before she just.
Yeah, no.
Takes over the radio.
We're gonna make it happen. We're gonna make it happen. But it's dope.
Actually, okay. Before I close, I kind of need advice. So this is like a community question for you people, and Hannibal, you can chime in.
Yeah.
Our crew behind the cameras can chime in as well. I need a creative idea for Halloween, and I don't know what to be. Or what to yeah.
For your
oh you mean
for your
like
costume,
costume
or for your party?
Costume.
I'm literally running out of ideas.
80s party?
Yeah.
Go as Heidi.
Heidi Klum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She went it. Wasn't she
no,
like a...
No, he can't do that.
Wasn't she like a worm or something?
No!
I don't know if that was wise.
Wow.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that.
Very wise today.
Go as Ty Tribbett and just be really energetic everywhere.
Oh, shit. Wow. Oh, shit. Wow. Oh, shit.
You could go. Thaddeus was my bass player on this LL run, and I also blame Thaddeus for, like, Thaddeus and the Roots. Shout out, we had a COVID situation with Mark, so Thaddeus had to replace Mark on the LL tour, and he made us a 30-year-old group again. Like, all that dancing, all that energy. And you kind of, you saw the last night. So Thaddeus actually broke his leg.
Wow.
Thaddeus broke his leg in Atlanta.
Shit.
So he was not supposed to be on his leg or dancing or whatever. So he pretty much, I don't even know if the audience knows that he was hopping on one foot the entire time.
Wow.
The entire show. Yeah, those Tribbetts are a special
you
kind
could
of.
Be, how about Black Doc from Back to the Future?
Yeah, that's not as fun. That's just a coat, science. Lab coat, and a.
Well, this way, I'm just trying to do anything that's short of Charlie Brown just putting a bunch of holes in the sheet and saying I got a rock.
You could be Denzel's character in.
Oh, Denzel is me.
Yeah, like I mean, that could be really kind
whatever.
Of meta.
I don't know. You could do Frederick Douglass. I was
that's
just,
a doubt. I mean,
fun Frederick Douglass,
Coach Prime.
But like, if you do Frederick Douglass, that could be funny. If you do Frederick Douglass, you got to go all the way. You got to show up to the party with a white woman.
Oh,
like, you have to go like go
That's a harsh reality that I wasn't ready to face today.
Cool. Yeah, you gotta fully commit. You gotta go all the way in. So maybe not the pretty.
But he was going.
He was.
Do that.
I like. I'm trying to think. Dang, that's a great question.
The lion. The Wiz is making a comeback. Let me see. I got
I'm on me, no lie.
Because I'm on me, no lie.
Yeah, I might phone it in this year, man. Like, I don't know.
What
have
is
any
she
going
to do? That's, man, shit. How she don't run out of ideas?
Mm-mm. Nah, she, you know, she's whatever she's doing, I know she's preparing the last week of September. So.
My favorite costume I saw y'all do, and this was years ago, it was a Roots show, and y'all came out in the Dead President as makeup.
Oh, that's right.
They used to do that. Y'all don't dress up no more.
We used to do Halloween shows. Yeah, but, you know. Yeah. All right. On behalf of Conte Fulman, Meef Sandel.
Who gets the last word?
Pompey Ill.
Pompey Ill.
Done. Done.
And Sayid.
Out. Lane Claire.
All right. All right.
And Bannibal Harris.
Yes.
This is Les Cove. And wow. Thank you for listening to our very long podcast. Is this a 3-hour?
Man, listen. No, it's two half.
That's not bad. Okay. Yeah. I love these quality shows when we get together and talk. So,
nah, and this was a long time in the coming, too. Yeah. Thank you for coming through,
for
bro.
For sure. Thank y'all,
you,
man. All right. Thank y'all for
we'll next time we do it live from your venue.
All right. All right. Back. For sure.
Ooh,
wow. Come on, man.
That'd be hard.
Come on.
Knitting Factory. Yeah.
Come on. Is that what it's going to be called?
QLS at the Knitting Factory.
Okay. No, what's it going to be called? Cam Idol.
Or have you.
Wait, you're not calling it the Knitting Factory?
No, that's a. No. Got to create a new. I got a working title, Isola Sessions, but I'm still brainstorming.
The Fitting Nactory.
Yeah. And that's a wrap. Made it out. Jake and Brittany, thank you very much. And we'll see you on the next go round.
This is Sugar Steve. Thank you for listening to Questlove Supreme. This podcast is hosted by Amir Questlove Thompson, Laia St. Clair, Fonte Coleman, Sugar Steve Mandel, and unpaid Bill Sherman. Executive producers are Amir Questlove Thompson, Sean G., and Brian Calhoun. Produced by Brittany Benjamin, Jake Payne, and Laia St. Clair. Edited by Alex Conroy. Produced for iHeart by Noel Brown and Mike Johns. Audio engineering by Graham Gibson at iHeart's LA studio.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.